Welcome to the Almost Awakened podcast. I'm one half of your host, Bill.
And I'm Mikkel.
And we're grateful for the chance to sit down today. Brad, is it Poulos?
Poulos.
Brad Poulos is here with us today. Brad, I'm grateful for the chance to sit down with you. Mikkel and I are excited about this conversation this morning. You are an expert in the cannabis industry. You've been a spokesman in that industry for a long time and been an advocate for all of us kind of opening up and seeing that this plant is a tool. And I know our audience is excited to hear some of the thoughts that you've got as well. But before we get started, maybe just introduce yourself, just a little bit about yourself and who you are and maybe how you got into the cannabis industry.
Sure. I mean, going really quickly through maybe the first 25 years or so of my career, I was first a techie and worked my way up through sales and marketing at a satellite company. And then about 10 years, I ran a wireless company with my brother. And that takes me to about 15 years ago. And then I started doing some consulting and also got hooked up with the entrepreneurship department at Ryerson and started teaching there. And it was kind of through that I got interested in cannabis, although I've really been interested in it, you know, my whole life as a, you know, a casual user, but also a believer that it had medical benefits and was being ignored largely by the world. Then, you know, fast forward to about 2015 or so, it was starting to look like there was a good chance that Justin Trudeau would get elected. And he had stated that he was going to legalize cannabis if elected. In parallel with that, what was happening was the medical regime was starting to really kick up. That was when companies like Canopy were starting to go public. Prior to legalization even being, I won't say telegraphed, but at least, you know, in any way committed to, we were having these public companies, starting to evolve. And as an entrepreneurship professor, I just found that fascinating. I was kind of looking for a new thing to do. And I actually looked at three areas in 2015. I looked at drones, cannabis, and blockchain. And they all had their benefits and they all had things that I found interesting, but cannabis far and away was the one that interested me the most. And it was the only one where Canada was possibly going to have a real structural advantage if we didn't screw it up. So that's why I chose that. And I started writing about it, studying it, doing a bit of consulting, sitting on boards and that sort of thing. And that kind of brings us to now. Oh, actually, I left out a kind of big piece. 2 years ago, I also started the Cannabis Education Initiative at Ryerson. And I'm the ambassador for cannabis education for our continuing education school.
I love it. I'll tell you, I smoked a lot of pot in high school. And back then, right, you had to drive somewhere and meet a stranger, pass some cash through a car window. He'd hand me a little bag and then me and my friends would smoke some. And the other thing too is we used to call it marijuana. And I know that label was never, appreciated as the right term. Somehow we've done it. We've made the move to now getting to call it cannabis. I know that advocates for cannabis have always kind of pushed for us to use a more, I guess, scientific term to it.
Right.
But marijuana's changed a lot. Cannabis has changed a bunch, right? Like the stuff I used to smoke in high school, suddenly now they've made this stuff potent. They've made it in different forms. This industry has absolutely transformed in 20 years.
Yeah, certainly when cannabis moved indoors, which is in the 80s and the 90s, that's when growers were able to start really kicking it up in terms of the output of the plant. When you grow cannabis outdoors, you're well, one thing is it can easily get fertilized by pollen in the air, and once that happens, then you're in a little bit of trouble in terms of the output. So you really want to try to maintain feminine plants that haven't been pollinated. So anyway, yeah. So back in the 80s and the 90s, cannabis moved indoors, driven primarily by the United States, but a little bit here in Canada, especially in BC. And when you and I were young, I'm not sure we're quite the same age, but, you know, 70s, early 80s, you were looking at THC percentages in the kind of single digits. And now you can buy cannabis in the legal market that's been tested at almost 30%. So you're right. It's like night and day. And that's actually, you know, it's good and it's bad. I mean, from a medical point of view, it gives us really strong products that can do their job. But not everybody should be smoking 30% cannabis. In fact, not everybody should be smoking it at all. So there's other ways you can consume it that are likely better for your body.
What? So going more into that, what is one of the best ways to get it in if smoking isn't the best?
I think it obviously depends on the need state. So if you're looking for pain, immediate pain, like relief of pain, you're pretty much stuck to smoking or vaping because that's all we have for rapid onset right now. But very, very soon that will change. There will be products widely available that go under the tongue or in the cheek that will allow you to get pretty much the same onset as you get with smoking or vaping. But if for recreational purposes, then frankly, edibles are a much better route in many ways, as long as you've got the time, because they can take a little bit longer to wear off, because you can get a much more sort of an even effect over a much longer period of time. But you've got to have the time to wait for it to kick in, which could be an hour to 2 hours. And then the effects could last possibly 8 to 10 if we're talking about, you know, the tail end of it. So it's not something that you want to do, you know, if you have to go out in 3 or 4 hours, not recommended.
Right. I've never used pot before. So this is all kind of new to me, but I have a friend that whenever they, and it doesn't matter which form they've taken it in, smoking it or an edible, they tend to get a lot of anxiety. Is that like after it starts wearing off? Is that common?
Very common, especially if you take too much. So cannabis is actually, it's like so many other drugs, alcohol included. A little bit can be great, too much can be not. And, you know, a little bit of alcohol will make you sleep. Too much alcohol will keep you up. A little bit of cannabis will relieve anxiety. A lot of it will increase it. And there, certainly people that have anxiety disorders are likely I'm not a doctor, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say they're likely contraindicated for use of cannabis. It's just not a great idea. Although, you know, there are very few contraindications for cannabis. But for those that don't know what that means, it just means the times when it's suggested that you ought not to use cannabis. So one would be if you're pregnant. Another one would be if you have certain psychological disorders. This is just going to make them worse.
Tell you,
the eating or the smoking won't matter. Well, I was just going to say, it doesn't actually matter which way you take the cannabis, whether it's some oil in the under the tongue or you smoke it or you eat a cookie. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the thing with like adult drinks, there's so many cool names, right? The industry has done a great job. People mix drinks and they come up with cool names for them. Cannabis even did better than this. I don't know. I'm looking at strains right now. Sour Diesel, Maui Wowie, Lamb's Bread, Durban Poison, Blue Dream, Girl Scout Cookies, Headband, Bubba Kush. Kind of a fun thing that I think the cannabis industry has done, which is create all these fun names for these various strains. Maybe for the person who's just beginning to think about dipping their toes into using cannabis. We live in Utah. We can't even legally get access to it anyway. But we're about 45 minutes away from Mesquite, Nevada, where they have a dispensary. And then, of course, we're 2 hours from Vegas, where they've got a bunch of them. Maybe tell people a little bit about THC and CBD. And if people are looking for certain kinds of effects, what type of cannabis they would probably lean towards?
Sure. So let me, I'm going to back up a little bit. So you brought up the idea of strains, which is, I think it's a great avenue to go down. So theoretically, a strain is a relatively sort of constant or predictable cultivar, which is a, you know, a version of a plant that has certain chemical and also physical characteristics. And so, you know, in an ideal world, if I got some Blue Dream, you know, and like from one time to another, I would have more or less the same effect. Just like if I go buy a particular bottle of wine, it'll probably taste more or less the same, you know, from time to time. Unfortunately, in cannabis, that's not even close to true. So it's the Wild West in terms of all these strains. But the idea, the theory is that, you know, a certain strain, so Blue Dream or Sour Diesel, has a certain combination of chemicals, which I'll talk about in a sec. And then would obviously that would translate to a certain effect on the body. Because we don't have the consistency, we can't really count on all of that. So I actually suggest people look instead of the strain. So instead of saying, I'm going to have some Sour Diesel or I'm going to have some Bubba Kush, look at the actual chemical components that that you desire. So let's kind of go down that road. You mentioned a couple, THC, CBD. So those are what are called cannabinoids. These are chemicals that are produced in plants in great abundance in the cannabis plant, but they're also produced in the body. So we have a system in the body called the endocannabinoid system, discovered in 1992. This is really new science. Like, we were getting high and didn't know how. Now we understand the mechanism. There are two receptors in the body, the CB1 and the CB2 receptor. Those bind to certain cannabinoids and then create certain effects in the body. The primary two cannabinoids, you mentioned them, THC, which is the one that's psychoactive. It gets you high. It also has all kinds of other effects, but that's kind of the primary one that cannabis is known for. And then there's CBD, which has no psychoactive impact at all, but helps greatly with things like inflammation and anxiety. It's highly recommended that if you are taking cannabis-derived products, so not the actual plant, that you not just have pure THC or pure CBD. There's this thing called the entourage effect, which basically, you know, is it's a combination of a bunch of chemicals coming together in your body and creating a certain effect. But the thing that we have to understand is there's really only two cannabinoids that get any press, but there are over 100 of them. There are the doctor that I like the most. He says there's 144, but I've heard 120, 150. So who knows? Okay. There's a bunch. There's over 100. CBN, CBG, THCV. Here, this is an interesting one, okay? If you take THC, you'll get hungry. If you take THCV, which is a variant of it, it suppresses appetite. So the problem is that these secondary cannabinoids, well, by that we mean everything except THC and CBD, they exist in the plant in really small amounts. So that's the problem, is getting them out and getting enough of them to formulate, you know, some kind of a product. Okay, so that's cannabinoids. But then there's a whole other group of chemicals, around 400 or so, called terpenes. And these are actually the things that give cannabis its taste and smell. And they are believed very much to be also medically important. So it's the combination in these strains, Sour Diesel or whatever, of both cannabinoids and terpenes that create varying effects in the body. So over time, what's going to happen is the science will improve, and the consumer information will improve. And what we'll be able to do is purchase a brand or a strain of cannabis by looking at what's in it and saying, okay, I really want a lot of myrcene and I don't want any pinene because I don't like what that does to me, but I really like myrcene because that kind of like chills me out. As we go down the line, you know, with science, we'll have a much better ability, I think, to craft a specific experience. And that makes cannabis very interesting because you can't do that with alcohol. It's not like, you know, people say, oh, I don't like how I get drunk on tequila, but that's just ridiculous. Okay. I mean, drunk is drunk. There's not much difference between vodka or whiskey or tequila or beer or wine, but with cannabis very much so, because like I say, these different chemicals, it's not just one chemical, alcohol, there's like 500 of them that are interacting with a system in your body, the endocannabinoid system.
That is really fascinating to me. And part of it is because I have a friend who is almost obsessed with essential oils, and she loves to learn about the chemical constituents in essential oils. And she's mentioned words like terpenes and all of that before. So knowing that about cannabis is really interesting.
Yeah, it's also interesting. We haven't known really any of the science for even 30 years. It's less than 30 years that we've known this. THC was isolated in the 60s, but we didn't understand how it affected the body. We discovered the CB1 and 2 receptors in the 90s. And I should mention, both of those discoveries and a lot of the really important discoveries in cannabis have occurred in Israel. They are by far and away the world leader in research in this area. Of course, in North America, it's been so difficult to get access to the plant, especially for those that wanted to try it on the human body. So if you were a researcher and you were growing cannabis, you could import cannabis to try, you know, your little research experiment in your university. But if you wanted to stick this in a human body, it was almost impossible. It's pretty much impossible in the United States and almost impossible here in Canada.
Interesting. So why Israel? Do they just have way lax regulations? And
No, they have really tight regulations. I actually don't know. I think it really just comes down to a couple of researchers got interested in this plant back in the 60s and started studying it. So
that's fascinating.
I wanted to talk for a moment about the different forms that cannabis comes in, because I think some of this is just kind of a prepper for our listeners. Our listeners are kind of those folks who look up anything and everything that looks interesting and sounds interesting. They just want to learn. They want to understand different things and have all the information available and educate themselves before they dive into something. So you could, of course, smoke it. And, you know, I've heard it called flower, but it's essentially the buds of the cannabis plant. I, for instance, have COPD. I have a breathing issue. And if cannabis became legal in Utah, well, actually it just did, but once the dispensaries are open and things are going on, with the cannabis industry opening up in Utah, I'm scared to death to smoke it in that form, to do it that way, because that seems like it'll be dangerous to making my COPD worse. But I've also heard, like as we talked about, there's edibles, there's vaping. I know somebody who does something called dabbing, where they take like the high strength kind of wax of concentrated THC and then heat it up and smoke it that way. Maybe talk for a moment about the pros and cons of the various forms that cannabis comes in.
Sure. And we have to remember, there's two types of users. There are like broadly, and then of course we could have all kinds of subtypes, but medical and recreational. And there are some medical users that, because of their use of cannabis over such a long period of time, and because they're using it to try to often, you know, kill pain, they need a lot of it. So for example, dabbing. I do not recommend dabbing. All right. Dabbing is heating up almost pure THC and sucking it into your lungs. I too have COPD, Bill. And so I'm not a big believer in smoking or even vaping. So, which I'll explain in a second. But so what dabbing is, you kind of hit it on the head. What they do is they take the cannabis plant and they reduce it down to essentially pure THC. And then you have a thing called a dab rig, which is a kind of a spacey looking thing that heats up the cannabis, and then you just essentially suck the smoke that comes off it. I don't actually recommend that. I've done my fair share of cannabis, and I have no desire to dab. I've never tried it. But that's what it is. However, for a medical user, they need that. They may need that super high amount of THC, and they need it right now. So kind of the only way to get it. Then we have smoking flower, which you touched on. I think everybody's.
Can I stop for a minute? I just want to ask. So the friend of mine who dabs, he claims that if you dab, like you're going to be like high as possible. Like you're gonna be so high compared to like eating an edible and it sounds mm-hmm. like that's what you're confirming as well, that the concentrate is so strong that it's gonna be a much more significant high.
Correct. That's absolutely right. And that's why recreational users do it. You may also be familiar with the concept of a bong, which is a water pipe essentially. And it's got a bowl full of water. There's a thing that comes out that you put the cannabis in, and then there's a long tube that you suck. So what happens is the smoke comes down through the water, is cooled, and comes up through the bong. Again, it's a really, really strong effect. I've only done it a few times in my life. I don't like it. It's too much. You know, most cannabis users just want to chill. It's like having a glass of wine. You don't necessarily want to get blottoed. You know, I mean, I drink wine a lot, and I get drunk every 10 years, maybe by accident. You know, I mean, just because you're an alcohol user doesn't mean you're trying to get drunk. And the same thing is true of cannabis. A lot of people come home from work, they just want to chill. They have one or two puffs off a joint that lasts 3 days, you know, because they only have a puff or two at a time, but it chills them out. And frankly, I think that's a really responsible way of using cannabis. Getting super high is fine, I guess, if you don't have to do anything. I'm not a believer that anybody, you, me, or the government should regulate anyone else's consciousness. You know, I'm a freedom guy, so that's fine, to each their own. Anyway, so that's dabbing. Then we have flower, which you would either smoke in a joint or put in a bong, or put in a pipe. And that's pretty much what it is. I can tell you that there is actually no evidence that smoking cannabis causes cancer. It doesn't have anywhere near all these terrible drugs that, or compounds, you know, that tobacco has. So you can really put them in two different categories. But that said, you know, having COPD, I just think it's common sense that you just don't smoke it. You find another way to ingest it. So we've got edibles in a gazillion forms, right? And if you can imagine eating it, then you can put cannabis in it. There are chefs that will teach you how to cook like main dishes. It's not just about confectionery, right? There are chefs that will teach you how to make a stew that has cannabis and get the right amount for your guests so you don't, you know, get them blottoed. But then I think what's interesting is some of the formulations that are coming down the pipe. So there's a company here in Toronto area, in Oakville, called Rapid Dose Therapeutics. And they've been making these little, you know, a Listerine strip that you put on your tongue, you know, instead of a mint. Well, think of those, but they're in a single package because you don't want them sticking together because it's dosage. So a single package, you open it up. It's got a strip just like that, goes on the tongue, and relatively rapid onset. So they're experimenting with THC and CBD right now because those are the cannabinoids you can get in abundance. There are also sprays that go under the tongue, primarily for medical use, but there's no reason you couldn't use it for recreational. Again, much quicker onset. These things just aren't available commercially yet, but really soon. I'd say in the next year. Then there's also drinks. Not a category I'm excited about as a professor because I just don't see the business model there. I find them to be too expensive. They represent 2% of the market in Colorado, where we have the most data. Not an important category. Here in Canada, where we drink a lot of beer, it seems people think that people are going to move from beer over to cannabis drinks, but I can't see that. I don't think it'll happen. And then the last, we just made these legal here in Canada back in December, topical creams. So things that go on your knee or your wrist or that, or maybe for a skin condition, that sort of stuff. And the thing about those is, the chance of you would probably have to bathe yourself in it to get high. So you don't have to worry about that, you know, that happening, which is a big concern for medical users that want to work.
I have a friend that uses a cream for migraine headaches. And so that I was going to ask if there's anything coming like pain patches or other ways that you can apply it to help with pain. So it's localized.
Yeah, so that's the idea of the topicals, is to make them localized, because obviously if you ingest it in the mouth or smoke it, it's going to be across the entire body. Yeah, it's just a bit early for that. We just don't have really good data. And again, it all goes back to, until a year or two ago, you couldn't even study this here in Canada. And in the States, of course, it depends on the state. Yeah, so in the next few years, it's going to really take off. I think that if we were to have this conversation in, say, 2 years, we won't even hardly even be talking about cannabis flower. It's going to be all these formulated products.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, again, for a guy like me who has COPD, if I was going to take cannabis, I'd take an edible. It takes, I think, you know, my friends have told me it takes about an hour or so to kick in. And, you know, to have an option to not smoke something, but to have it essentially enter your system immediately is kind of a cool advancement in the technology of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing is, of course, they're working on rapid onset is obviously the goal, but also a reasonable offset. So in other words, a reasonable time to the effects wearing off. And then, of course, you could always just take more if you need it, but to give people more flexibility in their lives so they don't have to put aside a 4 or 6 hour window.
Yeah. I wanted people to see the dab rig. So I just want to add it up here. Just kind of, let's see here. So just for the listeners, and if you're watching right now, kind of a cool little setup. This thing is kind of looks high tech. Kind of blue flame on a, what's that? This is a dab rig. So yeah. So they put the little wax there where that flame is hitting the other thing, and then you would breathe it in, right?
Correct. Yes. Yeah. And what goes in the little cup there is either wax or shatter, which is almost 100% THC.
So if you want to blast off, maybe that's the way to do it.
But you could buy CBD shatter and get a big, huge hit of CBD, which wouldn't get you high, but would, of course, have all those other benefits.
I heard somewhere that if you take THC just by itself and then take the CBD, that oftentimes the CBD will help calm down or, in some cases, negate the effect of THC. Is that correct?
It's absolutely correct. Yes, they modulate one another. It goes both ways. That's why people that are on CBD, their doctor has them on CBD. He or she doesn't specify just CBD. There'll be a small amount of THC in there, not enough to get them high, but enough to kick in that entourage effect.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Gotcha. Cool.
Well, Bill, I was having a hard time waking up this morning. You know how it goes. You stay up too late partying or hanging out with friends.
And then you've got to get up early to record a podcast. So what do we do in those instances?
And on every other day of the week?
Coffee.
Red Roca coffee.
It helps you and me as we're awakening in the morning.
My favorite brew is Heathens or Good Mojo. And sometimes I like it hot. In the summertime, every once in a while, I'll drink it cold.
Red Roca Coffee is a small family-owned business here in the United States.
If you need a cup of joe to help you awaken,
give Red Roca Coffee a try. We're sure you'll like it. That's Red Roca, R-O-C-A, coffee.com. When you place your order, put in the code AWAKE.
A-W-A-K-E.
You'll get a 10% discount, and you'll get free shipping on orders over $30. Check out Red Roca Coffee today.
Again, Red Roca Coffee.
For those times when you need help awakening. I'm curious, you know, the argument from critics of cannabis is that we're coming up with fake health benefits, and we're essentially just trying to justify cannabis so that it becomes legalized all the way, you know, across the country. First, obviously, medically. And then right behind medically, it happens recreationally. And we're seeing that happen. Utah just passed legalizing it medically. And yeah, and here you are. You're in this state that is very much influenced by a certain religion, right? And yet here it is. It's now medical. And it's probably just a matter of time, 5 or 10 years, whatever it is, before it becomes recreational. And it's probably going to be recreational everywhere at some point. With that in mind, like, maybe run us through – are there real health benefits? And you're naming some of those already, but are there real health benefits? And what is some of the science saying in terms of things that cannabis actually does help people out with?
Okay. So there's, I can divide that into kind of two groups. So there's the things that we know for sure. The things we know for sure is that cannabis is very effective with pain control, managing inflammation, managing seizures. Here's an example. There is one drug that is legalized in the United States that's a cannabis derived. It's called Epidiolex. It's CBD only, and it's intended for seizures for children primarily. But there are children. There's a young lady who just died last month, named Charlotte. I forgot her last name. I think it's Fuji. Charlotte. There's actually a product named after her called Charlotte's Web. She was having hundreds of seizures a day until starting to take cannabis. And then that reduced to a couple. There are dozens of those kind of cases. There's a version of cannabis, a strain of cannabis here called Zen's Garden. Here, by here, I mean in Canada. And it's named after a young boy named Zen. Same thing. So hundreds of seizures down to none, like virtually almost none. So there's that. Then it's helpful for anxiety. It's helpful for headaches. So these are the kind of the symptomatic things that cannabis can help with. But these wonderful doctors in Israel are also starting to discover that cannabis can have curative effects, like actually kill cancer cells in a petri dish, but kill or reduce or kill them entirely, reduce the numbers, stop their growth, all of those different kind of modalities. The two I'm familiar with are breast and prostate cancer. So there's really good science that cannabis may actually, you know, solve conditions. And that's amazing for me, because I will admit, I've said this many times, when I kind of entered this industry, when I started looking at it carefully, I was a firm believer that for symptomatic relief, cannabis is, it's real. It's not, there's no BS behind that. You know, cannabis does help pain. Cannabis does help inflammation. It's hard to argue with that. There's such strong evidence, but I didn't believe for one second that cannabis would ever cure anything. And now I actually believe it might, you know, there's some good science that says it does. And, you know, I'm just going to quickly go off to something that's not cannabis, but I think is really, really fits in that with this discussion is it has to do with magic mushroom, psilocybin. So this is the next thing. And it's actually where I'm turning a lot of my attention now, because the cannabis industry is not really doing much in Canada right now. And there are lots of studies that show curing. And by curing, what I mean is yesterday the patient had symptoms of the disease and now they don't. They're just gone. Curing PTSD with one session of using mushrooms, cannabis or psilocybin, magic mushrooms, if you're using them recreationally, with a therapist. This isn't just go in your room and take some mushrooms and you'll be better. This is guided therapy, but using the psilocybin to take your brain to a different place. It's like a total brain reset. So that's kind of the next thing, but we can move back to cannabis now.
That's fascinating to me. I work in the medical industry, and so I'm always trying to stay versed or remain knowledgeable. And I've read some stuff that indicates the same thing, that psilocybin has been shown to be beneficial for PTSD and other forms of trauma in a mm-hmm. guided therapeutic session. So that's fascinating.
Yeah. Okay. What were we talking about with cannabis though? I forgot.
Well, that's okay. I was just going to ask too. I know that when I was doing some research on you, Brad, and trying to kind of figure out what various facets of cannabis you've spoken on and some of the things you said, I saw that you give a presentation in the workplace. And I think the title of the presentation is Cannabis in the Workplace. And I'm just curious, like, should we all just be smoking pot in the morning before we go to work? Like that sounds like an interesting world. I'm curious what your take is there.
No, not at all. In fact, I mean, okay, I you know, I like wine. I'll have a vodka here and there. I don't ever do it in the daytime, like while I'm working. And the same thing should be true.
That's a drinking problem, right?
Yeah. So I mean, there's a few ways we can attack this. I mean, obviously, medical users, they have to survive while they're working. So here in Ontario, because this stuff goes by provinces in our country, and probably, well, of course, it does by state in yours. So the rules in Ontario are that if a medical cannabis user needs access to their cannabis in the daytime, the employer is required to accommodate that. That doesn't mean you have to give them a room to smoke it in. You might have to make them go outside, but you can't prevent it. But that said, your employer is allowed to require you to not be intoxicated while at work. So you have to manage that really, you know, it's kind of a tough balance there, but that's for you, the user, to do. As far as recreational, there's no accommodation required by the employer. So when I was giving that talk, it was really around legalization, and all I was doing was going around to employers. And at the end of the day, I can boil it down to one sentence: whatever your cigarette smoking policy is, that should be your cannabis smoking policy. Cause we've harmonized those at the government level in Ontario. Wherever you can smoke a cigarette in public, you can smoke cannabis in that same place. And the prohibitions are the same as well.
Are there a lot more work accidents?
Not yet, no.
Okay, good.
Oh, actually, okay, so you just hit on something that I think is really important, because your question implies that legalizing cannabis creates new users. And I do not agree with that premise. There's no evidence of that. We have lots of states now to watch in the United States, and we have a year and a half of data in Canada now. Perhaps at the margin, legalization will create a handful of new users, or might bring back people that tried it a long time ago and then went away from it and really weren't interested because it was illegal. But now that it's legal, okay, I'm kind of interested. But I don't think those people are going to become, you know, huge users. The truth is, cannabis use doesn't change when you legalize it. Hmm. It's just who's getting the money. Legal. Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to talk about who gets the money, but I have another question. For someone who's never used marijuana or cannabis before recreationally, what kind of things can they expect to feel or notice, or walk me through kind of what happens in the body?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm going to assume we're talking with THC, so you're going to get somewhat high. Okay. So first of all, you're going to go low and slow. First of all, you're not going to smoke it and you're not going to vape it. You're going to have an edible. That's what I would suggest for someone who's never tried it. And I would suggest going low and slow, literally for yourself. If you've never tried it, I would try 1 milligram of THC, which is the smallest amount you can buy. And you might not even feel anything that day, but at least you didn't get all hyper and anxious and whatever. And then try two. And, you know, if one didn't work, two probably will if you're a newbie. And then what will you feel? Especially the edible high is really, it's what they call a body stone as opposed to a head stone. So when you smoke cannabis, most of the feeling is in the brain, is in the head. So it's, you know, you just have a feeling of euphoria and hopefully you might get a feeling of anxiety. It does happen. or paranoia. But hopefully you'll get a feeling of euphoria and a little bit of a kind of a feeling of well-being in the body. But when you ingest cannabis through, you know, orally, then it's much more of that body effect. So it's kind of just a feeling of a bit of a glow and a feeling of well-being and chillness. You know, for 99.9% of the population, it's going to definitely, you know, cool you down, chill you out. If I can't think of a medical term, but, yeah. So that's, I don't know if that describes it enough, but
yeah,
that's how I would describe
it. And then going back to legalization doesn't really change the users, but it changes who gets the money. What do you mean by that?
Okay, so before legalization, the only way to get your cannabis is through an illegal dealer or an illegal dispensary, which is obviously hooked up to illegal growers. It's all one ecosystem. There's just different levels of player in it. And none of that money, that's all in the, you know, the illicit market. I don't like to use the term black market, but just so people know what I mean, there's no taxation that, you know, the employees don't pay unemployment insurance or any of that stuff. So then once you legalize it, well, here in Canada, we, you know, of course we know only Canada could have a head start in cannabis and screw it up, right? So here we have taxation at the manufacturing level. There's an excise tax of $1 a gram. And then in my province, we have a sales tax of 13%. So that works out to about 23% taxation on the legal stuff and 0% on the illegal, which might explain why a full year and a half into legalization, the legal market enjoys maybe 20% of the market.
That's crazy.
You opened your eyes really wide there, Mikkel, at the amount of tax. Yeah, and I've got two people I know that own dispensaries in Vegas, and if I'm not mistaken, the tax rate they told me was 20% there as well. So it's the government is getting a really nice, pretty chunk of this cash, in which, you know, again, to make it legal and to go ahead and move along with that. Hopefully, they're putting that money to good use, but that's a lot of money.
Are there benefits to legalization? Say, does it test purity? Do they have to guarantee certain standards are met, et cetera, et cetera?
That's the argument for legalization. So the our government made, there were eight. So the way we legalized it is we this is how Canada does everything. We put together a committee, right? And so the committee had a mandate to look at cannabis legalization, and they came out with eight recommendations, but they really boiled down to two. And so the two recommendations were: come up with a framework that will, one, keep cannabis out of the hands of children, and two, get the cannabis dollars out of the hands of organized crime. All right. Now that's the stated objective, but the real objective is the money. It's billions and billions and billions of dollars of taxation.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. There's an incentive there for them to obviously do it. But yet they've been so resistant, right? Like, we had this huge drug campaign in the 70s, 80s, 90s. And it's only recently that we've kind of opened back up and we've started to look at cannabis. We've started to look at psychedelic mushrooms, like you've spoken of. You know, Mikkel and I have talked before in the podcast about some of the research going on with MDMA or ecstasy, same kinds of results with therapy, getting rid of PTSD. A lot of these drugs were labeled Schedule One. Cocaine, for instance, is Schedule Two, which makes no sense to me that these other things are Schedule One, cocaine Schedule Two. But we're really beginning to get to a place. And again, I get it. When we alter our consciousness, we tend to begin to deconstruct systems and to question systems, and we're less likely to just get in line and follow. So I can see why these systems are afraid, or at least have been up till now. But now here we are, we're in this renaissance where we're beginning to look at these drugs again and say, let's be honest about the data. Let's stop making up what these things do to you. I remember presentations in my school when I was a kid about the ill effects of LSD and how it would totally screw up your brain, and how cannabis was going to give you cancer, and you were going to have a depreciation of number and effectiveness of sperm, for instance. We're finally feel like we're chasing the data, and we're allowing the data to sort out whether this stuff is useful or not. Maybe your thoughts on how far we've come with all of this.
Not that far.
Not far enough.
I was having a coffee with two friends a couple of years ago and told them I was entering this industry. These are two really, really intelligent people that had no relationship with cannabis ever in their life. And they were shocked. This is still a problem. And, you know, our minister who is in charge of legalization, who's an ex-cop, get that, right? Put an ex-cop, not a nurse, not a doctor, an ex-cop in charge of legalizing a drug. He said, you know, we're not trying to normalize cannabis. We're just trying to legalize it.
It's insane.
And so every talk I give, I say, no, we actually should normalize cannabis. Let's take four drugs, okay? Alcohol, cigarettes or nicotine, cannabis. Well, let's just take those three, okay? Alcohol, cigarettes, and cannabis. If we just discovered all three today, which ones would be legal?
Yeah, it should.
Would alcohol be legal?
Should be out. Yeah, it shouldn't be because yeah.
I mean, I like my alcohol, but it's poison.
Sure.
I want to stress that point. Okay. If I drink a bottle of vodka, I'm dead. I'm just dead, right? If I smoke cigarettes, I have a really good chance of developing cancer. In fact, I thank my cigarette smoking for my COPD. I don't smoke cigarettes anymore, but I did until 20 years ago. And, you know, thank you very much for that. There is there's a thing called the LD50, which is the lethal dose for half of the population. It's how we figure out how lethal something is. You're probably familiar with it, Mikhail. So do you know what the LD50 is for cannabis? You would have to smoke 1,500 pounds in 15 minutes. So it's a theoretical limit. It's not actually achievable. And the reason is really simple. I mentioned earlier these CB1 and CB2 receptors. The CB2 receptor, oh, I'm not sure which one. One of the two doesn't exist in the brainstem. So It's the brainstem that causes, it's the alcohol's effect on the brainstem that causes you to ultimately die if you take too much. It just suppresses everything, suppresses your breathing, your heartbeat, all of that. Well, cannabis doesn't affect that part of the body. It's virtually impossible to die from it. You can overdose in the sense of what I would call an overdose, which just means you've had too much, but you can't overdose in the sense of dying from this. This is a non-lethal product.
Which is like mind-boggling to me that, like you said, substances like alcohol, which is super toxic to your body and highly abused, cigarettes, and then, I mean, I would throw in pain pills. People talk about pain pills and being on pain pills as if it were nothing. And yet here we have this plant medicine that you technically can't really die from. And yeah, it's illegal.
Thank you for I was going to say it was a segue. So the point, what was the point you just made though? Sorry, because I was formulating my thought and then
pain pills.
I lost. Yeah, right. Okay. The gateway drug. So people, going back to what Bill was saying in our high school education and, you know, the danger, the reefer madness and, oh, it's a gateway drug. You start taking cannabis and then all of a sudden, holy smokes, like by next week, you'll be on heroin. All of that, you know, ridiculous dogma. Well, you know what I say? Cannabis is absolutely a gateway drug. It's a gateway off of opioids. There's great studies in Colorado of opioid use dropping with cannabis use increasing. And wouldn't that be awesome? Even if people still have to use some, I'll take it. I have a family member. I'm not going to mention the exact relationship, but I have a family member who has a license to inject herself with morphine. She has pain so bad. So, and this is really hard to get in Ontario, but she has it. It requires you to sign a contract with your doctor that you will not see another doctor for anything. You know, it's a really, really tight thing, but she has liquid morphine and hypodermic needles. So she can inject herself with morphine. That's how bad the pain is. By taking on cannabis, that morphine use has gone way, way down.
Yeah, it seems like such a no-brainer if we can get people to move from things that actually are doing damage to their body and have a risk of death to them to something that is, for the most part, completely safe. I'm curious, my last question for you, and then I'll let Mikhail ask anything she wants to in terms of concluding, but I'm just curious what your thoughts are on cannabis as a tool in terms of changing consciousness. And this is a space that, you know, I've read Michael Pollan's How to Change Your Mind. I'm very aware of the research that's out there, again, on MDMA, on psychedelic mushrooms, on cannabis. You know, and it seems to do the, those kinds of things seem to do some of the same stuff that, say, for instance, meditation does, which is allow you to see the world differently and begin to challenge some of the paradigms and perspectives that we've established over thousands of years as human beings to figure out new and better ways to do things. Your thoughts maybe on cannabis as a conscious altering tool that has benefits?
Oh, sure. And in fact, you may be aware of the kind of, I guess it's a well-known fact that if you use a lot of cannabis, it can affect your short-term memory. So that's well understood by the medical community. And the mechanism for that is the same mechanism that allows you, if you wake up in the morning and let's say you've got to write a term paper, you wake up and have a little bit of cannabis. That effect that's causing your short-term memory loss, which is essentially, you know, things aren't going into the memory. And why is that? Because you create sort of a tunnel vision. You can really, really focus if you have a small amount of cannabis. If you do too much, of course, it's over. But the reason I bring this up is that what a lot of people are doing now is microdosing. So they'll take, somebody like, you know, a regular user of cannabis, they probably need in the tens of milligrams to feel any kind of effect. And I'm talking about taking like 2.5 milligrams in the morning and then maybe another 2.5 at lunch. So you don't actually even know that you're high. You're not high. You're just slightly, your consciousness is just slightly, altered. And I think, you know, it all has to be studied a lot more, but I think we're going to see a lot more of that. And of course, that's much more, it's much more kind of consistent with the idea of the workplace.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see if the benefits of these are recognized by, you know, the various states or provinces, countries as a whole, and that we now start to see these things as helping us as a humanity, as a collective race, move forward. I love it. I love it, Brad. Anything from you, Mikkel?
I'm just fascinated by all of this. Had no idea that you could microdose cannabis. And so just interesting that you can do that and some of the health benefits. You know, I haven't studied a ton of stuff about cannabis. And so I'm just learning a lot and fascinated about the different strains and the different ways that you can get it into your body. And
yeah, and this is very much the early days, Mikkel. So like I say, we've just started really studying it on any, you know, on any significant level. I know several doctors here in Canada that are working on formulations for cannabis. So, you know, really specific combinations of these drugs to try to achieve certain effects. And, you know, that'll probably start in the medical community, but then it'll ultimately make its way into the recreational. So you'll be able to buy a drink or a chocolate bar or something that, you know, that mirrors that effect. It's going to be a really interesting, you know, next 10 years or so.
Yeah. Super interesting. Cool. At some point, and maybe you can direct me or our listeners to some information. I'm particularly interested in learning about the legalization process. And it seems to be money driven. It's interesting because you talked about it moving from illicit, you know, like the crime world into a more regulated world, but it just seems like it's moving from one corrupt system to another. And
you're absolutely right. And especially if we look at here, the early days, going back, say, 5 years when I jumped in, so many of the people that were running these public companies were like previous stock market promoters. Right. And they ran mining companies before they ran a cannabis company. And it was absolutely just a total, you know, a total stock play. And that's the shame of it. And the real shame is that the people, unlike in the United States, most of the states that legalize, they do have a process to allow people to move from the illicit market into the legal market.
Interesting.
We made that almost impossible here. So
it's too bad. Because
yeah, I could do a whole other hour on how we messed up legalization.
Hmm. I would like to get into that. Yeah. Appreciate your time. I've learned so much. Just fascinating. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, happy to be here.
Yeah. I'm just curious if people want to know more about what you do, where can people find out more about you?
Oh, I have a website. So just go to the website, bradpoulos.com.
Perfect. I appreciate your time this morning. You know, you gave us an hour and we had a chance to kind of talk about a lot of little issues that are entry level questions and answers into the arena of cannabis, and just appreciate your time and just thank you so much, my friend.
Oh, it was an absolute pleasure actually talking to the two of you. And I'd love to come back if you ever want to go deeper into the subject.
I'd love it. I love it. We'll keep you on the virtual Rolodex, my friend. Have a great day and enjoy the grandkid. I've got my first grandson and they're a lot of fun.
They sure are. Thank you so much.
Take it easy. So, Mikkel.
Yeah.
Cannabis. We gotta figure out a way to make it legal in Utah, and we can, you know, we can start off with 2.5 milligrams and maybe increase our work productivity.
Maybe. I don't know. Like, we can't drink at work, you know, not allowed to smoke.
No,
right. Intermountain's got a pretty strict policy on some of those. And so I can't imagine a world where they are just like, yeah, sure, just go smoke a little.
It's going to be cool.
Bill, it's hard for me to wrap my head around because I grew up in the same time era as you did. You know, the commercials that we would see on TV, this is your brain, and then crack an egg, and this is your brain on drugs. Like, it's hard for me to shift that paradigm and not be afraid.
Yeah, there's a couple documentaries. I think one of them's on Netflix right now about psychedelics. But the reality is, and it's kind of hard for us to fully understand this, but the reality is that the government went out of its way to lie about the negative effects of these drugs so as to scare the hell out of people into using them. And it seems as though somehow it did. And somehow collectively these social systems realize that if people are using conscious altering drugs, they will begin to challenge the status quo. And it happened, right? Like, when you look at the 70s and Woodstock and all that went into what those collective movements contained was this idea of like, enough's enough. Like, we don't need war. We don't need to have government set up in certain ways. People should be free. People should have rights. These are tools, and to some extent they scare systems to death. Most religious systems want you to stay away from these substances because they want to claim a monopoly on a unique experience, like a spiritual experience. And, you know, again, having used marijuana in high school, very much a cool experience going on in your head when those things occur.
Would you call it spiritual?
Yeah, but not based on some magic being in the sky. But it certainly gives you a chance to kind of see the world in a really new way and to think about things differently. So it's cool that we finally are at a place in 2020 where social systems are beginning to allow the data to determine which direction we go in instead of just lying and scaring people.
Sure. But I still feel like it's in mostly money driven, even if the data is there.
Yeah, but they could have made the money. I mean, they could have made a lot of money 20 years ago, and they chose like, ooh, the risk of being challenged is greater than the benefit of making tons of, you know, cold hard cash.
It's true. It makes me wonder, when I was living in Idaho in 2013, there was, I pulled up the article because it was, I remember, it resulted in, this was a traffic stop, but there was in Soda Springs, which is this little tiny town up in Idaho, set up against the mountains. There was a huge pot farm that was discovered by some people that were like hunting or horseback riding or something way up in the mountains. And it was like Idaho's biggest pot bust like ever. It makes me wonder what happens to all of those seized drugs. Oh, $80.5 million worth of marijuana.
I can tell you what would happen if I would have found that field in high school.
Yeah.
yeah, it makes you wonder, do they just burn it or what?
Over 40,000 plants.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's quite crazy? A seizure. Yeah. Yeah. You know, maybe a few officers stuck a little handful in their pocket. I don't know.
Probably.
it's just, you know, it's just cool to think about. Like, there was marijuana, and it was not, you know, it was strong. To me, it was strong, you know, at the time. And to now hear that they're refining this stuff, getting it much more concentrated, especially when they start putting it into edibles, or like he was talking about the dabbing, and for this thing to be so much stronger than, you know, the stuff I did in high school. And the stuff I did in high school was, I had a lot of fun,
It's probably, probably some other stuff mixed in there, Bill.
Yeah, maybe that was the trick. And that's the other thing too. There is a benefit to legalizing, which is, as you pointed out earlier in the interview, is to control the quality of it so that people can get the same experience time after time rather than hit or miss. Because when people have a hit or miss experience, they tend to take more than they need to the next time because they're not sure if they're going to get a no effect or a lot of effect, and they want to make sure they have a good time. And then you also reduce and eliminate essentially any chance of contamination. So there are some benefits to doing that. This was a fun interview. He was really, really knowledgeable and
super well-spoken, you know, and
well-spoken, like, yeah.
Focused. He didn't get off on a bazillion tangents, knew his information. Yeah. He was a good find.
Cool.
I'd love to have him again.
Yeah. We'll definitely reach out to him again when we cover cannabis in any way, shape or form. Maybe someday it's legal in Utah. Maybe someday it's perfectly okay for you and I to, you know, have a little pain in our back or something and get a medical card. And if that's the case, maybe we're revisiting this and talking about our own personal use of this stuff.
Maybe.
Who knows?
I hope I never get back pain though. That's
so, you know, you just go to the doctor next to the dispensary and you just tell them your eye hurts or something and you get little card.
Some eye drops.
Yeah. And you're off. And that's, oh man, that's the thing too. Like, for them to be working on taking a little strip or putting a couple drops under your tongue, and that's 10 minutes later, you're on your lone little quest.
Yeah. I'm fascinated with, like the product development that he talked about, that, you know, edibles, he said, take like an hour, 2 hours before they hit your system. And so to be able to have a formulation that you could spray something or put one of those Listerine things on and have it hit your system in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
That'd be
cool.
So
there's the fun in technology as things get better and better. Anything else? Anything else going on in your life? Anything else important? Anything else kind of cool?
No, Kelsey's reading The Body Keeps Score. Have you read that book?
I have not, but I've heard of it, and if I'm not mistaken, it deals with trauma, correct?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
is she liking it?
She is loving it, and she pointed some stuff out last night that that was interesting. Yeah. We'll have to talk about it later, not on the show.
Gotcha. The Body Keeps Score. I'd love to do that. Yeah.
Other than that, it's just like, you know, same old, same old. Watching case numbers increase in Southern Utah like crazy.
Yeah. So now we've gone back to less social distancing, less stay at home, and numbers are picking up.
It's interesting. So we had a meeting at work, and one of the managers from up north came down for the meeting, and he was like, Southern Utah is in its own little world. They just don't think they have to follow the rules. They do whatever they want. And he's like, I don't get it. Interesting.
I went to get my hair cut yesterday, and I walk in. I don't have a mask on. Shame on me. And a lady there has a mask, and she says, do you have a mask? And I said, no. And I said, do you require it? And she goes, yes. So I went home and I got a mask, but we've got several at home. And, but then I went back, and both of the workers cover their face, but they didn't have their nose covered, right? Because it's hard to breathe if you cover up your entire face. But what you don't realize, it's like taking a condom to an orgy, but leaving it on the end table, right? So the idea is that you're putting a mask on to follow the rules, but you're not covering your nose. So you're really, you know, yeah, okay, if you cough, it's covering your face, your mouth, great. But if you sneeze or you're breathing through your nose, you're still sending particulate. In other words, don't chew me out for not bringing my mask to get my hair cut when you're not really doing it either. Like,
right.
Fine, I'll just put my mask, you know, on my back and we'll just cut my hair and move along. Like, I don't know, whatever.
It's funny because I worked in surgery, and so we had to wear masks and goggles and, you know, hairnet whole nine yards, gowns, gloves, everything. And you just, the more you do it, it gets easier to adjust to. And so I just think it's funny that people are just in an outroar about having to wear a mask when they go to the store or like to the doctor's office or whatever. It's not, you're going to be fine.
Yeah. I'm a little, only because I got COPD. I think most people can handle it great.
Sure.
But I'm worried about the carbon dioxide that I'm breathing in a heavier amount of CO, you know,
just take CO2. It off your nose,
which is what everybody's doing anyway. It is interesting working at the pawn shop. People get right in your face. They have a mask on, so they're protecting themselves, trying to protect you, kinda. And then they get right in your face to talk to you. It just, whatever.
Yeah.
Personal space, people.
So other than that, like, nothing's new.
Yeah, same here. Not a whole lot going on. Closing song today. I just thought, in honor of Brad in the cannabis industry, I found the song. We both like reggae. I found that we both love Revolution. Revolution has a song, So High, which I really like the song. And so we're going to play it now for the listeners and close out this episode. Good time seeing you, Mikel. Good conversation with Brad and just a lot of fun. But have an awesome day. And for the listeners, don't forget to visit almostawakened.org. Hope you enjoyed this conversation as well. This was one of the funner ones, I think, that we've done so far.
Yeah, it was good.
Have a great day. Take it easy.
Control it, now we getting high. planet Earth in a place, catch a vibe. Iron Lion, watch me levitate. Now I did it good, representing for the brave. Marijuana, I love it to my death. Plus I'm from Amsterdam, so there's S on my breath. Never fuck with them, we only blow dank. I supply vaporizer, it's time to elevate, yeah. Who's got the herb when I'm dry? I wanna get so high, yeah. Who's got the herb when I'm dry?